Welcome to Whipple's Press Box Podcast, where we discuss the latest topics in the professional world of sports. Enjoy our exclusive interviews with athletes, coaches, insiders, and fans. And now, here's your host, Gary Whipple.
The Green Bay Packers made a hauling in last year's NFL draft. Can they do it again in this year's draft? Greetings, I'm Gary Whipple, and thanks for joining draft expert John Vogel of the Sick Podcast and I for a special podcast on the upcoming NFL draft, which will be held later this month. John, welcome back.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Hey, we had a lot of fun getting this set up, didn't we?
I don't think we want to bore our listeners with this gory
event, technology. Yeah.
Well, it's not your fault. It's I think it was operator error, and the operator in this case is me. So thank you so much for being patient, and I'm sure our listeners are looking forward to hear what you have to say. Before we delve into the situation with the Green Bay Packers and their draft, Packer fans obviously are very excited about this year's draft. They have five picks in the top three rounds, or five picks in the top 91. And they came off in an incredibly good draft last year. They landed promising tight ends, Luke Musgrave and Tucker Kraft, some promising receivers like Jaden Reed and Vontavious Wicks. And then, of course, their first-round pick was Lucas Van Ness, who I would imagine will have a breakthrough season this year. But before we delve into the Packers, like I said, let's talk about the draft in general. From your perspective, how would you rate this draft on a 1 to 10 scale? 10 saying like it's otherworldly, 1 saying one of the worst ever.
Oh, I wouldn't say it's one of the worst ever, because, I mean, you go into some of those classes in the 60s and the 70s, and you're like, golly, how did you get through – yeah. What was it back then? Like 25 rounds? Like, so, like, how did you all do that? I don't even know.
Yeah, you know what, John? I actually was part of that memorable time. I would get up to Green Bay like 7:30 in the morning. Draft would start right around 8 or 9, whatever it was. And it didn't get over until midnight. I mean, that night.
Yeah.
Because the Packers would bring in their, you know, number one draft picks. They had to wait around to interview them. But, yeah, how times have changed.
Yeah, now we break it up into 3 days, and it's, you know, it's a primetime event that pulls more viewers than a lot of NBA basketball games.
Well, bowling, you know, it's crazy NBA these days.
It's crazy, right? You know, it's like nuts. But, you know, but anyways, from a scale 1 to 10, I'd say this class is probably a 3.
Really?
There's not a lot of depth. Yeah. And so we could talk about that a little bit, because that's a whole – this has been been kind of floating around since – I guess December, January, when the underclassmen started declaring. So interesting stat is back in 2019, 152 players declared as underclassmen for the NFL draft. And at the time, that was an absurd number. One of the things, it was an all-time record high, and it had been consistently rising. But it was usually, I guess, since really 2011, 2012, you've seen about 100 underclassmen. It's always been over that have declared for the NFL draft. So them being obviously juniors, guys that have to declare that aren't automatically entered into the draft. You know, so basically this year we had 52 declare for the draft. We're talking about three rounds of players essentially that didn't declare that typically would for underclassmen. You know, so yeah, we have some of the COVID super seniors. We got some redshirt super seniors, guys that played 6 years of college. Overall, in terms of, you know, top end talent, very weak class. Not a lot of what you would call top 10 first round talent, or even top 25 for that matter. Not a lot of, you know, back end depth. And when you get to the sixth and seventh rounds, you're going to see a lot of different people come off the board, just because there's, hey, we're going to go ahead and draft this guy right now so we don't have to fight for him as an undrafted free agent. Typically, you don't really get that till the very end of the draft. You're looking at two, maybe even three full rounds of teams doing that this year.
Now, let me rephrase this in a different way. I had read about the same things about how the draft drops off at a certain point. How would you characterize the first three rounds in that same prism?
So I think once you get past the top end talent, I think that, when we get into probably picks 20 through 60, it's a free for all there too, because there's not a lot of difference between the talent, the prospects that are in that range. So even going into the third round, I think you're going to be able to find some suitable players and into the fourth. So I'd say it's probably five or a six, compared to recent years, just because of the drop off from the top end talent and the lack of it that's there. But you're still going to have a lot of pretty decent guys. It's a really good wide receiver class. It's a great offensive line class. But when you start getting on the defensive side, it's kind of weak. There's not a lot of top tier defensive linemen. There's not a lot of guys that look like they're going to do too much from the linebacker position. And corner and safety are even weak this year. We have a few guys that we're talking all about all the time, but once you kind of get past them, it's like, well, who do you start taking? So you're probably going to see a lot of offensive linemen, wide receivers, even the running back class, man, is weak. But that's what you're going to see a ton of go day two, I think.
You mentioned offensive tackles, and I've talked to a few people, and one guy told me the other day he had nine offensive tackles in the first round. Basically, a third of the first round would be offensive tackles.
That could potentially be. I think in my mock here that's getting ready to come out, I've got eight or nine up there. And so, because when you get into the back end of the first round, and we start looking at teams, it's kind of like, well, you have these position runs that'll happen, right? Where there's a bunch of guys that are grouped up and they're kind of in the same group of tier players for their position. And when one of them comes off the board, teams start panicking and have to take their guy before he's gone. So it's just like a run on a bank, essentially. Hey, we're about to run out of money. Everybody go get your money. Well, we're about to run out of these players. Go get your players. And so that's kind of what kind of happens there at the end. I think what'll happen at the end of the first round is you'll see this run on tackles, and it may push probably real close to the beginning of the second round. But I think in that 16 to 32 range, you're going to see a lot of them come off the board.
Gotcha. Like you said about this great group of offensive tackles. I mean, that's music to the Packer Nation. Obviously Bakhtiari is no longer around, and then Nyman has moved on. He signed with Carolina. There's a definite need there, and I would imagine they would even look at a guard at some point. Now, you and I talked about this last week. Barton from Duke kind of intrigues me. He could play basically wherever you want him to play, from what I'm hearing, center, guard, tackle. And also in our conversations with you are really high on the guy. So still feel that way a couple of days later after talking to you?
I mean, he's one of my favorite guys in the entire class, and I think it's first off because when we talk about a guy that is 6'5", 313, and moves as well as he can, that's tremendous. He played left tackle. I believe he played, let's see. Yeah, he played center his very first year at Duke. So came in during the COVID year, ends up starting five games at center. Then they move him to left tackle where he anchored down the rest of his career there and dealt with some injuries last year. Nothing too serious, just enough to miss four games. Looks like it was probably like a knee injury that he was kind of dealing with. But, you get, it wasn't, there's nothing that seemed to require any surgery or anything. So you're not worried about that. I think the medicals are fine. But yeah, he's real technical. He's got a really solid anchor, so he's a really great pass protector. And then even as a run blocker, you see him, he's very active. He can get down, he works into the second level really well, which is, you get past the defensive line and up into the linebackers. He'll impact there and open up, opportunities there. He's pretty darn consistent too, opening his lane, as that run blocker. Plus, he's from my neck of the woods. He's from Brentwood, which is just south of Nashville. Went to Ravenwood, which is a huge school there, and puts out a lot of talent. But this guy, very, very, like we talked, versatile, very versatile, ended up opted out of the Senior Bowl, I think, because he was still recovering from that knee injury.
Where do you think would be his best position in the NFL?
I got him graded as a left tackle, as a starting left tackle,
Left tackle,
but
yeah.
but he could play center too. The thing that you kind of look at with center is, and it's going to sound kind of funny, but you know, it's kind of true. I went through every single team this year and I broke down everybody's offensive lines.
Wow.
Because what you can kind of do is you can see trends based sure. on measurables, based on testing when they were coming out of college. You know, you get a feel for what they kind of prefer as offensive linemen. And so if you kind of look at the Packers tackles, they got a couple guys right now that the you would kind of classify as mammoths at the tackle position. Caleb Jones and Luke Tenuta. Those guys are huge. They're both 6'8". They're both well over 300 pounds. They've got crazy length. That kind of seems to be where they're hoping to go with the tackle position, is somebody that's huge.
Yeah.
You start to work into guard and center. That's where you start to get into guys that are more Barton size. So if he goes to Green Bay, let's say Green Bay get their hands on him, he's probably going to be a guard or a center. Now, the other thing that you start looking for at the center position, just overall in general, is you want guys with shorter arms. And we talk about arm length with offensive linemen because when you're engaging with a defender, you bring that initial punch. A lot of times you have to have the length to match them so that they can't extend beyond where you can reach. Right.
Sure.
So a lot of defensive linemen, when they're fighting you, are going to they're going to lock their arms out and try to create as much space from you. You want to close that space. So Barton has 32, just over 32 inch arms. That's usually the cutoff for NFL teams. It is for the Packers indeed. Now, the shorter arms for the center helps because when you're snapping the ball back, it's going to sound funny, but it's scientific. You're going to get the ball back there faster with a shorter arm. Or if you're a longer arm swinger, it's going to take you just that much longer to snap it back.
Yeah, attempt of a second or so, yeah.
Right. So you want to have shorter arms as a center, but you want to have bigger hands so you can grip the football. And so he's got just almost 9.5-inch hands and just over 32-inch arms. So he's got the size to play center, you know, for Green Bay and kind of fits all their measurables.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it just kind of depends where he goes. You know, he could play any position that you ask him to. He's ambidextrous, so he can go left or right. Doesn't matter. He's awesome. He's a fun prospect.
Yeah, it was funny because I tweeted out last week about how he seems like the ideal Packer offensive lineman. I mean, he's versatile. The Packers love versatility up front. And he's smart at the Combine asked him, you know, obviously he went to Duke, so you can automatically check that off about intelligence. But
yeah, I was about to say that too.
yeah. So, I mean, I asked him what his GPA was, and he goes, oh, 3.67.
Yeah, so, yeah, nothing crazy, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, mine would have been probably 1.7. But yeah, so, I mean, that. Do you think he gets to Green Bay, or do you think he's going to be in that range? What's your...
Oh, it's tough. You know, I think the NFL teams are a little bit higher on this guy than most of the media is.
Yeah.
You know, because the media is looking at all these big guys, you know, like the J.C. Lathams, the Amarius Mims, and going, oh, look at these guys. They're huge. They can move, da-da-da. You know, not a lot of people thought Peter Skoronski was going to be a top 10 pick last year, top 11 pick, because he lacked a lot of size. And the Titans took him, you know, with the 11th overall pick. So
yeah.
I do wonder if he gets all the way to Green Bay, if that run doesn't start early and if he's the one that starts the run. You know, I know that Denver's looking at him, but I don't know if Denver's going to have a pick, you know, after I think Denver could potentially move up very high to get a quarterback that they would like to have because they're going to need one. But I, you know, Denver would really like this guy. There's a lot of teams between Denver, Green Bay right now that could use this guy as well. So Pittsburgh could use him. It's tough. It's hard to say.
Yeah. Yeah. They also brought in Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma for a visit last week. I think last week, the week before. And I saw him at the Senior Bowl and good size. Then you also got, you know, a guy that intrigues me and you know, I'll acknowledge it. I haven't seen him play once, but just one of those, you know, where you meet a person, you go, man, he's a player, you know, just the way he talks, the way he's built, et cetera. And that's Jordan Morgan of Arizona.
Oh, yeah.
you know, and I think most people have him what projected late first, early second. And
yes,
your thoughts on him?
I liked him. You know, I thought he was a pretty clean prospect overall in terms of the way that he handles, you know, his finesse, the finesse aspect of his game. He's a strong pass protector. He tested really well too when he went down there combine, showed some, you know, straight line speed, even pulling his hamstring, ran a 5.04. So good. There's good stuff to work with there. Yeah, he's projected to be in that bottom first round. I think a lot of people have him circled, penciled into San Francisco at 31. And I think that there's some people that are wondering if he's going to be more of a guard at the next level as opposed to a tackle.
Sure.
But yeah, you know, Jordan, I got the chance to talk to him at the Senior Bowl too. And I really liked him, and I really liked the way that he carried and composed himself. And, you know, obviously you're not worried about him fitting into an NFL locker room. But the one thing I think that stands out about him is when you look at the Green Bay and look at the trends, right guard, left guard, he can fill one of those spots right now. And he's a guy who supposedly can play either way as well. So, you know, that's a underrated aspect of looking at an offensive lineman, I think, is can they play right and left? That's kind of a big thing.
Sure.
Because imagine you being a right-handed person and trying to write left-handed for the first time. I mean, that's kind of what it is asking somebody to move from one side of the offensive line to the other, because you're having to mirror your technique. So if you're playing right tackle, you'll go into your kick step with your right leg. Well, if you got to switch over to the left side, now you got to kick step with your left leg, you know, to get back into your anchor and make sure that you don't give up the corner. That's difficult, you know? So I think when you got a guy that can play both ways and he's done it already, and, you know, he's shown the ability to do it, that's a valuable part of the evaluation.
Yeah. Well, talk about a perfect segue, whether you could write left or right. The kid from BYU, Kingsley Suamata, is that how it's pronounced?
I believe so. I think
yeah.
You nailed it.
He said at the combine, he's equally adept at writing either left or right-handed.
Yeah.
I'd be happy with one.
Yeah, that goes right into what we're talking about, right?
Yeah. Hey, well, what's your thoughts on him? I mean, he's massive. I mean, I don't know if he's first-round material, but you know better than me.
Yeah, he's probably more of a second-round guy. He'll be a top 60 guy, for sure.
Yeah.
Maybe even top 50.
Okay.
He's a little bit smaller than a lot of these guys. I think that's what's pushing him down the board. Not in girth, but in terms of height. He's 6'4".
Oh, you know? Okay.
So that's one thing I think that'll push him down just a little bit. He's got really good length, came in with 34-inch arms, the Senior Bowl. I thought he had a really excellent anchor. This is a guy, he was a 5-star prospect. He was like number one tackle in his high school class 3 years ago. Took a red shirt at Oregon and then ends up transferring to BYU. And, you know, if you remember a couple of years ago when BYU played Oregon, there was the whole aspect BYU traveled to Oregon. Oregon's fans had some nasty things to say about Mormons. That was part of the reason that he made the switch, you know, away from Oregon, was because he saw that side of that fan base and ended up going to BYU. But he's been on Bruce Feldman's freaks list. He is an athletic freak and he's physical. I talked to him too. He was almost quiet and shy and almost timid a little bit, you know, in the media room with everybody. But, you know, he's a guy that can get in there. He's quiet. He's got a switch that he flips when he gets on the field. And he's probably a little bit more of a project just because he can clean up his feet a little bit. He can do some different things like that. That'll help his game a lot. But he's a guy that is probably a top 60 pick.
I would imagine Amarius Mims from Georgia is going to be in that area where the Packers pick at 25 as well. I mean, the people I talked to said, you know, he's got a huge upside, but raw. He hasn't played a lot of football, correct?
That's very correct. He's started a total of 8 games in his career over the last 2 years and dealt with some injuries this year. I think it was an ankle injury that forced him to miss several games, almost half the season for Georgia. But, you know, he is 6'7", he's 340, crazy length, just, you know, mammoth tackle is what he is, and he can move. He's got pretty darn good athletic ability as well. Tested really well, 5'07", 40. you know, 9.3 broad's pretty good. A 4.33 shuttle at 340 pounds is pretty nuts too. There's a lot of defensive backs that can't quite do that, you know. So, you know, he's got some lateral explosion to his game, which is good.
Well, what are you hearing as to where he's projected? I mean, it seems like there's
top 20
question marks about him.
There's some off the field stuff with him that people are still trying to sort through. I wouldn't say it's not like a Jalen Carter situation like we had last year at the combine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's nothing like that. I think it's just more so people are just wondering how much he loves football. You know, if you want to comp him to somebody, he's Eric Flowers. I am hearing he's probably a top 20 guy. So if we're talking about 24, 25 and getting down there, he may or may not be there. You know, if I don't think you're going to have a situation like what's his name, Tunsil, when he was coming out in 2016, I don't think you're going to see something get dropped draft night that shoots him down some boards. But, you know, it just kind of, it's really hard to look at his traits and think, oh, this guy, we can't take this shot with him. You know what I'm saying? Because he's huge, he's long, he's physical, he's athletic, he's strong. And yeah, there's a lot of reps on tape where, you know, somebody straight up beats him. And it's because he's just doesn't know how to handle certain types of attacks yet. But the ceiling with this guy is through the roof. I mean, he has an incredibly high upside. He could be an excellent right tackle, like all pro caliber, you know, for 10 years if he can hit that ceiling. It's just his floor right now is not very high. I don't know if you'd want to start him right away.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously there's going to be like four or five tackles that the Packers have zero chance of getting, like all from Notre Dame. Man, Alt looks like he's just like the complete ready-to-roll type offensive tackle. I mean, I can see why teams are, you know, thinking of taking him in the top 10.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to get past the Titans at 7, Gary. Wow. It's just, yeah, I mean, he'd be perfect there. And I know that the Titans really like him. You know, his dad, obviously, he was an offensive lineman too. He played in the NFL with the Chiefs. So he's got the bloodline as well. He's been around the game for a long time. And yeah, he's something else, and especially the more that you sit there and kind of watch him. He even came in bigger than people thought he was. We thought he was closer to 6'5". It turns out he's over 6'7".
Wow.
You know, so
I didn't see that. Okay. Yeah.
If you want to compare him to somebody, you know, in terms of the size and skill set, I thought that Eric Fisher made a lot of sense, who was the first overall pick in 2013.
That's a good comp. So if you're Green Bay and you're at 25, what offense tackles would you seriously consider taking there? One or two guys. I know the draft is so fluid, everything changes. And to be honest with you, I just chuckle at mock drafts. I love looking at mock drafts, but I know things change so rapidly, not only on draft day, but even before that. So, but again, your thoughts on 25 in regards to the Packers taking an offensive lineman?
You know, Guyton made a lot of sense. You mentioned him earlier that they brought him in for a visit. He makes a lot of sense and fits a lot of their measurables. He's not as refined as a prospect either, but he's right up there in terms of size, right there with Mims. He's about the same height, a few pounds lighter, but you know, he's another one of these guys that has upside, a lot of ceiling. And if you can get him to work his finesse game a little bit better and understand how to anchor, he's a guy that would have a huge upside. So Guyton makes sense to me. Uh-huh. And I'm pretty sure he'll be there on the board when they get there. You want to hope that these quarterbacks will push the run on offensive tackles down the board, or maybe some wide receivers stick around, or maybe those edge rushers, you know, Chop Robinson gets a lot of attention and goes a little bit higher than people expect him to. I think there's a lot of factors here that you're going to have to hope for. And if you can't hit those factors, you're going to have to probably trade up to get somebody. Because right now, with the way that the tackles can come off the board, the guys that fit, you know, the big physical type athletic freaks that you want at the tackle position are most likely going to be gone by then. And Guyton is the only one that might be there.
Okay.
And even then, what if Miami pulls the trigger on him? Because Guyton played right tackle at Oklahoma. and he's a pass protector.
Sure.
So that means if, you know, he could be a blindside protector to a left-handed quarterback who Miami has and they need. So,
good point.
Yeah, there's so many factors. It just kind of comes down to how does the board fall? When's that run start? But if I had to pick one and pencil them in and say this is probably their top tackle by situation and what could be projected, Guyton would probably fit that.
Yeah. And, you know, if you look at the history of the Packers, they, at least recent history, they don't believe in taking offensive linemen in the first round. You know, although with that glut of offensive tackles and guards there, I just don't know. I mean, it's going to be tempting, but let's say they stick to form and go into the second round. They got two picks, 41 and 58, I believe. Just a couple names that maybe would be second round prospects as offensive tackles.
You know, I think we hit them. Suamata out of BYU would be one.
Right.
I think he's probably going to be there. Patrick Paul would be another one to keep an eye on out of Houston. That's another 6'7", 330-pound guy that played right tackle at Houston. Or I guess maybe he was left tackle. He might have been left. Yeah, he was left tackle. Yeah. My bad. He's a little bit more of a project, too, you know, just with some of the way that he uses his hands. But he's not as laterally quick as some of these guys, which I think is why he's not up on, in this upper echelon. But I mean, he ran a college offense and ran a lot of different types of zone schemes. Looks like it'll translate pretty well. And as a run blocker, he can get the job done as well. So Patrick Paul, I think, would be a guy to keep an eye on, as well as the BYU kid.
Yeah, I mean, you're pretty confident though they could find an offensive tackle in the second round at 41 if they wanted to, or later, right?
Yeah, it might be in that range there. And, you know, maybe you get to the point where if there's a run, you take Paul with 25, you know, you feel like there's a chance he won't be there. The thing that you got to also remember about the second round is when we start the draft that day, a lot of times there's trades, you know, up Correct. To the first or the second or third pick.
Yep.
And it's because it's like you're resetting, it's a restart. And you get up to the top of the second round and take somebody that you're like, I can't believe he's still there. You hope that run on offensive linemen doesn't continue beyond that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we know that offensive tackle is a need for the Packers, but to me, their primary need is a cornerback. And I know there's people out there that disagree, but if you look at it, John, the last couple of years, their cornerbacks are talented, but the problem is they're not available. Jair Alexander missed a bunch of games last year. Stokes only played in three, and they were for a minimal amount of time. And in the NFL, my theory is if you don't have good cornerbacks, you better look out. I mean, so to me, it's like they got to cover their bases. Even if one of those guys go down, they're playing guys that, you know, have promise, but they're not ready to roll. I did a tweet a couple weeks ago, maybe 2-3 weeks ago. I said my way, way too early tweet on the Packers draft. I had him selecting Nate Wiggins of Wake Forest. Where do you see him falling into the draft, and what do you like as a defensive back?
So Wiggins is – we just talked about him on our pod. It's funny that you bring him up this last week. I think in the episode that dropped on Saturday. You know, it was our cornerback episode. Maybe that might have been Thursday. Anyways, we just talked about Wiggins because he's one of the strangest prospects I think I've ever seen.
Really?
You know, from a tape evaluation. Yeah. So Wiggins came in there and ran a blazing 40. I mean, 4.28 at the combine, pulled his hamstring at the end of it while he was doing it. Tested really well, you know, with explosion, 36 vertical, 10.7 broad. He's got ridiculous speed. He's got an excellent motor. The one thing that worries you is his coverage skills. And it's because you'll see people consistently get a 2-3 step advantage on him.
Wow. I didn't realize
the
that.
The thing about it is he recovers because he's got that crazy speed.
Yeah.
So he'll come back into play and it looks ugly as all get out, but he'll make a play on the ball,
yeah.
You know? So yeah. You're like, it's hard to say because, you know, if you get it around a guy that's going to be really good, a quarterback that's really good with timing, you know, like think of Joe Burrow, someone that has to rely on timing and anticipation to win on those matchups, he's going to have a field day with this guy. So, you want to, you kind of, the projection with Wiggins is difficult because you want to see him react a little bit faster. You want to see him get his hips around. He's a little tight in his hips. And that's part of the reason he gets 2-3 steps behind guys, but that recovery speed is incredible. So I think he probably falls to the bottom of the first. There could be a team that pulls the trigger on him a little bit earlier, you know, around 20, 23, 24, 25 in that area. I could see him getting to Green Bay, but I think a lot of people, I think I had him at 30, might have been 30th overall to Baltimore, you know, because he's got crazy, crazy speed, crazy recoverability, but that some of his reps, you're just like, man, he is so ugly. We'll cover in this guy, but he gets the job done, you know, and you're like, yeah. You hope that holds up at the next level.
You know, I mean, the fan favorite, it seems to be out there, is DeJean, Cooper DeJean from Iowa. Plays
corner,
plays safety. I don't know. You've seen tape of him.
I saw him in person, actually, at the
Combine?
Music City Bowl.
Oh, you saw him playing a game. Okay, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, I watched him. I saw him in person. And, you know, it was funny. It was 2022. New Year's Eve 2022. They were playing Kentucky, and I saw him warming up catching punts. And I was like, who is this guy? He's kind of explosive. Like, he moves really well. Da, da, da. I had no idea who he was because, you know, he was a sophomore at that point. I wasn't tracking him at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, who is this white kid that's jumping like a black guy? You know, like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, so he had a pick six in that game, took it back for a touchdown. He made a couple of really good plays. And by the end of it, I knew who he was, you know, and I had started a report. I went back and looked at tape and I was like, this guy's going to be special. And the thing that with him is he's not just a defensive back. That's not just what you're getting with him. You're getting a special teams weapon as well. So I personally haven't projected more as a strong safety. I think he'd be much better there. He's not as reactive, you know, as an athlete. You know, I think that's really important as a corner, is being explosive and all that, but being reactive and being able to match somebody. So think about it this way. If you're returning a punt, you can create things. That's more of a creative athletic ability because you got to make this guy miss.
Mm-hmm.
That requires special athletic ability, and Cooper has that. Now, as a corner, you're that guy, right? That's reacting to the guy that has the natural athletic ability, and you have to be a little bit quicker than him. You have to be able to read things better. And I don't think he's necessarily as good at that as he is as a natural athlete. So I think with him, you're getting more of a safety type prospect. He's a really good tackler, special in the open field, and he's got good ability to cover in space. And he's much better in zone coverage than he is in man. So I think he's probably more of a safety at the next level. It's not just because he's white, okay? We haven't had a white starting corner in the league since 1995 or something like that.
Is it really? Yeah, I was going to say it's been a long time.
It's been that long, yeah. And I think the last one that played extensive time was in 2001, and he wasn't a starter though, so it's been a long time. He's just more of a safety because he's just not as reactive, in my opinion. Now, you may try to, someone who takes him may trot him out there and say, hey, let him fail at corner before we move him to safety. That's a philosophy that a lot of teams have when they're drafting people, but that's my opinion. I think he's more of a safety. He's going to be a special weapon on special return. On special teams,
sure,
especially with this new kickoff rule, man. With the new kickoff rule, he could really be a valuable weapon in that, and he's an excellent punt returner. So I like him for those reasons. He's really explosive. He looks great in person.
Do you have first round grades on my favorite name in the draft, Kool-Aid?
No, so I think I have a first round projection on him, and you know, that's kind of part of the thing with draft analysis. When you're in media, you have to. You can have a grade on a guy, and that's not a representation of where you think he's going to get drafted. That's just saying where you think his talent level is, right?
Right.
And people get that mixed up a lot, you know, when you're talking draft with people, because they're like, oh, well, you have a third round grade on this guy. Why do you think he's going to go third round? He's clearly going 16th overall. It's like, well, because that's my opinion of where his talent is right now. That's not to say I think he's going to go third round. you know, and that was a lesson I had to learn very early on when I was first starting doing this stuff.
Yeah.
And realized that, hey, it doesn't matter what you think. It matters what the NFL thinks. So I think he's got a, I think he's a first round pick. My grade was more of a third round talent. And there's a little bit of speed concern on Tate sometimes. I think he recovers pretty well. I thought he was a thumper. There was, I think my podcast host, Justin Gamble, the co-host with me on the Sick Pod, I think he made a really good point when he described him and talked about Pat Surtain when he was at Alabama. He knew he was the best player in college football. And so he kind of played like it. And that's kind of how Kool-Aid played, but he really doesn't have Surtain's skill set to be able to pull that off. So maybe the tape is a little less impressive. He might be humbled a little bit when he gets to training camp and gets roasted a couple times, and that might help him. But I liked him as a prospect, and I think he's got some upside to present still.
Yeah. Well, Packers general manager Brian Gutekunst loves Georgia players. He's got a bunch of guys, and I'm sure he would have drafted some other guys if he could have. But Lassiter is a Georgia guy. Some people like him, some don't. Where do you fall into the category on him?
I think if you put him in a match system, you know, so we're doing a lot of matching coverages. It's a hybrid between man and zone coverage. It's what a lot of teams are running right now. I don't think Green Bay necessarily runs it as much. But you put him in a heavy match system, he's going to be okay. Because he's got speed concerns. You know, ran a four. He's got speed concerns. He ran a 4.640 at his pro day. And I mean, the agents went to work. They were trying to recover from that. Oh, they were putting, oh, yeah, he ran a 4.52, 4.55. No, he ran a 4.63.
Wow.
That's what came out of the pro day.
Yeah.
And so that's a little bit concerning.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, the average speed for a corner, I could tell you right off the top right here because I got it, is actually, give me 1 second. I got to pull this up on my thing.
It's probably like 4.4 or something.
Yeah, it's 4.49. That's average.
Yeah.
You know, that's average. And he's well below average, you know. So I don't think you would necessarily want this guy in too many man coverage situations. But he's physical. And I think he can kind of offset players a little bit, you know, receivers with his physicality. Because when you can land a really good punch on a guy in the when you're pressing him or something or just disrupt him with your positioning, you can slow him down a little bit and force him to have to recover. Especially on more vertical routes, routes that require more speed. But I thought he changed direction decently well. So his pro day, oh, I said 4.63 is 4.65. My bad. But he can change direction really well. He ran a 6.62 three cone. So, you know, you run around these three cones and it's sort of like a figure eight, essentially. It's like a triangle figure eight, if that makes sense. It tests your ability to change direction and get up to speed. So he accelerates fine and he moves really well like that. He's very fluid. So he might be able to deal with some more finesse stuff too underneath, but you're a little bit worried about that speed. That's a little concerning.
So if you're the Packers at 25, which of these DBs do you like?
Yeah, 25. If I'm going to take a DB, it's going to be Cooper. I might wait. I could probably get Lassiter at the bottom of the second round or even maybe in the beginning of the third.
Sure.
And if I liked him, I could put him there, but, when you kind of get past that big group of corners, there's a lot of guys that are very intriguing. You know, I thought that the Kentucky kid at the Senior Bowl, Andrew Phillips, was a guy that was really impressive. He's 5'10 and a half, 191, but he ran a 4.48 and had a 42-inch vertical and 11.3 broad. So he tested incredibly explosive. He's a guy that I think even when you start to get in the third round, if he's still in the board, you kind of have to, hey, this might be a dude. And then I think the other guy to keep an eye on would be the Louisville corner, Jarvis Brownlee. Brownlee didn't test at the combine. He's a transfer from Florida State, played 2 years at Louisville, but had a really, really awesome Senior Bowl and showed a lot of talent and ability there. I think he'd be a guy to keep an eye on too.
Yeah, in what round?
Second, third, in that range. He'll be in that range.
Gotcha. Okay. I don't know how closely you follow the Packers' draft patterns over the years, but the position you least expect the Packers to select a player, that's who Gutekunst will pick. I mean, nobody saw Jordan Love coming. Even last year with Van Ness, I thought for sure they would get a tight end, and maybe move back in the first round to get Mayer or someone like that. But they ended up taking two tight ends.
Well, nobody thought Sean Clifford was going to be drafted, let alone in the fifth round.
Oh, I mean, you know what? And I'm a Gutekunst fan, but I'll tell you what, that came out of deep, deep left field.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, I texted my buddy that was in the war room at the time, and I was like, this guy? Like, what are you all doing, man?
Yeah. I mean, but you know, the guy has got results. He's been, you know, he's proven to be a shrewd, you know, evaluator. But and it's funny you brought up quarterbacks, because, or I brought up the quarterback situation. They looked at a couple guys now at the Senior Bowl, Spencer Rattler and who's the other guy? The quarterback from Tennessee.
Oh, Joe Milton.
Yes. They talked to both those guys, and they have had interest. So I'm not so sure if they wouldn't take a quarterback, you know, maybe in the fifth round, fourth round, who knows. But the kid I like on that team is Magoo, who played in the USFL last year.
Yep.
I
USFL
thought,
MVP.
Huh?
USFL MVP.
Yeah, I think he's terrific. And he's, you know, not getting a sniff. I mean, they drafted Clifford, and I think that kid, I mean, he's only, what, I think 26 yet, has a chance to be a really good quarterback. I know it sounds absurd, because he won't have a prayer playing in Green Bay, but anyway, so, hey, but so, which brings me to this point. We talked about offensive tackles. We talked about cornerbacks. What other positions, or specifically, what other players would be in that 25 range for the Packers? I know there's a couple, you know, defensive linemen, perhaps. Anybody that comes to mind for you?
So I think a few guys keep an eye on would be Chop Robinson at Penn State. He could be there.
Okay.
And Darius Robinson out of Missouri, defensive tackle, defensive end hybrid. You
he
know,
is
he'll probably be,
isn't he?
Yeah, he's interesting. You know, he played defensive tackle his first several years at Mizzou. And then last year they make the switch to defensive end, and he's productive. And it was like, whoa, where'd this come from? That came out of left field. But he's interesting. He's got some tools and stuff to work with. He could be in that range. There should be a couple corners and stuff, or excuse me, wide receivers that should be in there as well. That should be
well, would
probably
you
available.
Act if the Packers took a wide receiver with their first pick?
I would be flabbergasted if they
Yeah,
did it.
same,
I'd be
same
shocked.
Here. So watch, they'll take
a
wide
you know,
receiver.
yeah, right. That'd be an eye opener. But you know, you'd be looking at a. Just to throw it out there, an A.D. Mitchell, maybe an Xavier Worthy, the Texas receivers.
Yeah.
They could be in that range as well. Maybe a Ladd McConkey out of Georgia. I've been hearing he might go a little higher than people realize. He's in a crazy awesome route runner. That's some pretty awesome change of direction ability. But I think that's when you talk defensive lineman, that's kind of who will be in that range, who should be available about then.
Yeah, you're talking about the Thomas, the receiver from LSU. He's
yeah.
One of my favorite guys. Talk about smooth. I mean, it's like effortless how he, you know, comes in and out of breaks, and his speed is right up there with, you know, with them. So
4.33 40 at 6'3", 210.
I mean,
I mean,
it's just he glides though. It's not like he's making an effort to even run that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, and size wise and stuff, he compares to Denzel Mims. I think was a second round
yeah.
pick in 2013. Maybe it was a little. No, I'm getting mixed up with somebody. Somebody, but you know, yeah, I know the Mims was a second round pick. I can't remember what year it was.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Those Baylor receivers kind of like stick together. You know, you're like, I can't remember what year they came out. There were a bunch of them that were coming out at the same time that had similar skill set. But yeah, speed's awesome. I mean, yeah. Smooth athlete. He's probably number two when he comes out as a number two receiver. He'll probably, but he's got the ability to continue to work up into a one, you know, so to be a primary receiver somewhere. He's fun. Brian Thomas was and I mean, he had a great year too. It was a breakout year for him with Jaden Daniels and Malik Nayers. He was a huge part of that offense. I think, let's see, yeah, 17 touchdowns last year. I mean, ridiculous production as well in that explosive offense they had. He's fun.
Yeah. You know, John, every year I pick out a player that I personally like. I'm intrigued by him, and I don't go in with the idea that they're going to be a star or superstar or anything like that. But like Tutu Atwell a couple of years ago, okay? I mean,
That's
you
not,
know.
I saw him in person too. He was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, a strong gust of wind should blow over that guy. You know what I mean? He's
He's a
pretty.
little stronger than that. He looks small, yeah, but
He's small.
he
Yeah,
is
he's
tiny.
strong. I mean, for his size, but what is he like, 5'7" or whatever it is? And
Yeah, it was 155. Yeah,
yeah,
like.
and when I saw Montez Sweat for the first time, I go, my goodness, he can play for me. And now, you know, obviously he's with the Bears and he's done a tremendous job last season coming over there. But the guy who is my favorite this year is Tavondre Sweat of Texas, the massive defensive tackle.
Nose tackle, yeah.
Yeah, and I know some people saying, hey, you know, he's nothing but a glorified Gilbert Brown, the old defense tackle for the Packers, or you know, but this guy is massive, and I think he has the right attitude. I talked to him twice, and I think he's got a chance to be really good, a really good run stuffer. And if you're the Green Bay Packers, that's a priority, finding somebody that can, you know, clog up the middle. And I was just curious to see what your thoughts were.
You do need a nose tackle right now. The only one that I've got you down for is TJ Slayton.
Yeah, Slayton and Clark are going to play inside as of now in that 4-3 scheme they're going to use.
Yeah, so what you're gonna have, basically a one tech and a three tech. The one tech will play some zero as well, right over the center. So that's where Sweat's gonna have to be. But at 366, the way he moves, oh my goodness, you're just like, wow, this is. He moves like he's closer to 300, and maybe a little bit under. So the athletic ability is not a concern. The strength obviously is awesome. And he had a really good counterpart that he was working with too. When he was at Texas with Byron Murphy, who would probably be off the board before the Packers pick, honestly. Murphy is really good too. Reminded me a lot with the way he could finesse and fight his way back there of Aaron Donald. But I think Sweat is fine. And I think he might have a little more of a pass rushing, repertoire than people realize. And it's because, we talk about edge rushers being the guys that ultimately affect the quarterback, and that's the important thing, and so on and so forth, et cetera, et cetera. He really got to have the interior presence, to keep him from stepping up in the pocket, and to let those edge rushers get around the edge and let them use their bend to get around the tackle. If you keep that quarterback, from being able to step up, he's going to be there when the edge rusher gets there. And so I think Sweat is not just, I think he's more than just, a run stuffer or, a power guy, a strong guy. I think he can offer a little bit more than that. Not necessarily on the stat sheet, but he's going to help set up a lot of people so that they will be, they'll be on the stat sheet.
Yeah, you can project. I mean, I see him going early second round, but again,
Yeah,
he
I think top 60. He might be
top
closer toward,
60. Yeah.
yeah, he might be closer toward the bottom,
Okay.
because typically we don't take nose tackle types that high, but he's a guy that they may consider to be a little bit more special. If you look at people that measure like him, that are typically a late second, early third round pick.
Yeah.
So, and you got him in this class. You got a kid out of Florida Atlantic, Evan Anderson,
Okay.
who. He's kind of the same type of player, maybe moves about the same, that I really liked as well. So you got a couple options at nose tackle, and sometimes it's not a position that's necessarily prioritized, but when we're talking about a 366 pound guy that's catching touchdowns,
Yeah.
might have to take a look at this guy.
Yeah. By the way, my favorite player going into last year's draft was Jaden Reed from Michigan.
Yep.
I love
Shocker.
that guy, and I think he's going to be a star. He's got a chance to be a star. He's somewhat small, but man, is he tough and great route runner, great hands. To me, they got an absolute steal with that pick.
You got a whole wide receiver room full of those guys now. That's what's crazy. I
Yeah.
mean, you're too deep across the board. you know, with whoever you want to plug in there, you got him. Christian Watson, Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks. I thought Bo Melton looked really good too. Like Romeo Doubs. Can't forget about Doubs.
Yeah.
You know, like it's a crazy wide receiver room, and they're young and they're going to be there for a long time.
Well, I mean, this is venturing off the tracks a little bit, but Bo Melton's brother, Max Melton, is in this year's draft. And, you know, the Packers are in the market
pick,
for
yeah.
a DB. It wouldn't surprise me if they took him, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Say, John, one other thing I wanted to pick your brains on, the University of Wisconsin Badgers have a couple players that could be in the draft, and the most notable one is Braylon Allen. And like you said, it's not a great running backs class, but he's kind of an intriguing prospect. Big back with good speed. I think he's got really good feet. He's been banged up, and that's kind of derailed his career somewhat. But I think whoever gets Braylon Allen, whether it's third, fourth round, is going to have a nice pickup.
He's one of these high upside running backs, but it's because he hasn't been playing the position that long, you know. So I think he's only played running back 4 years. He was a safety and a linebacker when he was in high school. And in 21, they played in the spring up there in Wisconsin due to COVID shutting their fall season down. And they didn't have a running back, so they asked him to play. He was already committed to Wisconsin to be a safety. And Wisconsin's watching him going, hey, you might be better at running back than safety, and brought him in and moved him over officially, you know. So there's some nuance to the game, I think, that he still has to learn. You know, he needs to understand how to set up defenders a little bit better. He could be a little bit better as a wide receiver and as a pass protector, but because those are three aspects of his game that he's still learning and he can still grow massively on, that's when we start talking about upside and projection and hey, his ceiling's up here.
John, that's a wrap for today. Thank you so much for taking time out of your hectic schedule. I know you're bombarded with a lot of requests these days prior to the draft. And again, I really appreciate your help. And also, thanks to our loyal listeners. Take care and all the best.
For more sports news, check back every Tuesday for our latest show. You can also follow Gary on Twitter @GaryWoofel and WoofelsPressBox.com.